Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, Karen Conti is one of Chicago's most prominent lawyers and legal analysts. She's also my attorney, my colleague here at WGN Radio, and my friend. For 37 years, she has actively litigated cases across the country, tried jury trials, and handled appeals in a variety of different practice areas. And for over 20 years, Karen was a law professor at the University of Illinois College of Law, DePaul Law School, teaching classes on death penalty class and trial skill courses. Did I read all that right?
You spread it so well, Dave. Really, it was perfect.
Okay. Well, in 1990...
You forgot to talk about the Academy Award I won.
I could do that. I could do that, please. In the Emmys, too, of course. In 1993, she got the call. That really would change her professional life, the call to represent serial killer John Wayne Gacy. Karen's new book, Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy, Defending America's Most Evil Serial Killer on Death Row, is out now, and she joins us in studio. Welcome in on this Friday, Karen.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I want to go back a little bit, because I discovered this about you reading the book, is that you were about 7 or 8 years old when you talked to your father about a headline in the news about the death penalty. And as a kid, which really surprises me, you were quite argumentative. Really surprising. So, but you tried to reason with him, and then you're using like your own life and cleaning your room as an analogy for why the death penalty isn't good.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I've always been against the death penalty. And my father reminded me of the story. And he said, yeah, if someone kills someone, they should just fry him. And I said, no, Dad, that doesn't make any sense. Why would killing, if it's wrong to kill someone, then it's wrong for, you know, the police to kill somebody. And I said, it's sort of like if I messed up my room and you wanted to punish me, you came in and messed up my room. Dad, that makes no sense.
I can see this at 7 or 8. For sure. So when did you know you wanted to be an attorney? Did you, like, is it really like an elementary school? Like, when did you say, like, I want to be that person? And who was a role model for you?
It was probably in high school. I mean, I didn't have any lawyers in my family. I didn't have any college graduates in my family.
But you had the fight in you.
I had the fight in me. Yeah, I was a middle child, you know, and all those middle child
Jan Brady.
Children out there. Yes, you always see the inequities. You know, the older sibling gets to do whatever he wants. The younger sibling is babied, and I'm the one who gets the brunt of everything.
You had a fight.
Yeah, I had
a fight.
I did. But I think, you know, in high school, I got the urge to maybe run for office because I had people like Judy Bartopinka in my neighborhood who I really looked up to. I thought she was fabulous. And I thought the best way to be a politician is to be a lawyer. Now I wouldn't be a politician. No way I would have the skin to do that.
Judy was a really interesting person, wasn't she?
Well, she was. And, you know, she was at a time where, you know, she was a Republican, but she was very liberal on social issues. She was very common sense, very hardworking, and a really strong woman. I admired her. I still admire her.
But, at the core of the American justice system, and we've talked about this before at your book launch, was everyone deserves a defense. That means everybody. So how did you come to represent John Wayne Gacy?
Well, my law partner and I had argued before the U.S. Supreme Court on a First Amendment case, and Gacy had been sued by the prison system. In Illinois, you can be sued if you're an inmate if you have the ability to pay. And
they're
so
not paying,
they did not like Gacy, and they wanted to not only execute him, they wanted to take his money. So he wanted us to represent him in that. So we got the call, and we had no intention of doing this. I had no intention of representing him for free in a case that, you know, he had an impending execution date. Right. But I wanted to meet him. I was curious. I was so curious to meet the epitome of evil, right? And, you know, I had read all the books about him, and we all grew up in a culture in Chicago where he was the boogeyman, right?
Yeah, he was.
And I wanted to see what that was like. I was just really anxious for that experience, and we did. And once we got down there and I realized they're going to execute a human being, and once they start executing people in Illinois, all these other people on death row are going to go next. And some of them actually have good defenses, unlike Gacy. So we decided to take on the death penalty part of it as well.
So how many years in were you practicing at that point?
It was about 6 years. So I was a very young lawyer, and I certainly had never handled anything of this magnitude.
I was going to say, what kind of cases did you have at that time?
I had criminal cases, mostly blue collar and a few white collar cases. I also did civil work. But fortunately, Gacy had two death penalty lawyers who were very experienced already on the team. So when my partner and I joined, it was kind of a good group because...
So that's what it was.
Yes,
it was a full
a team,
couple different... Okay,
yes.
Gotcha. And you were young, you were hungry at the time, but you have said that John Wayne Gacy was the poster child for the death penalty, but you still wanted to represent him.
Absolutely. I mean, to me, the rule is, in my view, it's wrong. If it's wrong for everybody, it's... And again... when you make these arguments, Dave, you're making the arguments not just for the Gacys of the world. You're making arguments for people like Rolando Cruz, who was actually innocent and walked off the death row after spending many right. years in jail. And 12 people actually walked off death row in a 15-year period in Illinois. 12 were executed, 12 walked on actual innocence. That's why our conservative Governor Ryan commuted everyone's sentence.
Right.
So, you know, it's sort of like you're representing a cause, not just the defendant.
That makes sense. But you must have understood maybe how unpopular that would be to represent him, right?
I did, but I had no idea of the magnitude. I really did naively think that people would understand what you said, which is everyone deserves a defense, especially when you have an execution date pending.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's serious stuff. And but I got it from everyone. I got it from friends. I got it from clients who quit. I've got from judges, even
really?
Neighbors. I mean, yeah. We had bomb threats. We had death threats. It was really a bad time for that kind of stuff.
So you're dealing with that, and then you realize I really have to create a relationship with this man if I'm part of his team and representing him. So what was your impression of him as a human being?
Well, he appears to be normal, right? When I first met him, I thought for some reason you could tell that he was evil. Like you would see something and go, ah, I see that evil side of you. I never did see that evil side of him. I saw the affable, glib, kind of know-it-all, intelligent, charming, funny person who engaged in conversation like anyone else. And you could see why he got away with it, because he was so charming. No one would ever think that he was capable of some of the most evil acts I've ever imagined.
Well, and he has to be mentally competent to hit the chair for the most part. I mean, you got to make sure that he's of sound mind, so to speak. But how do you say that about somebody like that, you know?
Well, he was clearly of sound mind.
Yeah.
And, you know, the insanity defense is rarely successful because you have to prove that a person has a mental illness or condition that causes them not to understand what they're doing is wrong. And Gacy, by burying the bodies, of course he knew what he was doing was wrong. But was he mentally ill? Yeah, he had some serious issues. But again, that did not present itself in normal conversation with him.
He must have freaked you out, frightened by him at any point. I mean, first of all, you're in death row. So when you go first see him, so
yes.
You're surrounded by just horrible people. It's a dangerous place. He was stabbed.
Yes.
At some point. So ever frightened, ever concerned, ever at any point, were you ever alone with him?
Yes. I mean, I was never afraid of him.
Okay.
I wasn't his type. And he was a controlled killer, meaning he stalked his victims. He knew exactly what he was going to do. He didn't just lose control. But like you said, death row is one of the most dangerous places you can possibly be. And all of these killers are walking around free range. I mean, this is not the plexiglass that you see in movies. So I'm looking at this guy who killed his entire family. I looked at this guy who poisoned three people. I looked at the I-57 killer. I mean, these are all the worst criminals in history of Illinois walking around next to me. And some of those people were not as controlled as Gacy.
Wow. I'm assuming you were escorted in there by somebody, by a security guard, somebody?
No, we were let in by the guards.
Wow.
And they lock the door behind you and they're watching you. But I frankly, if someone were to have done something, I'm not sure the guards would have gotten to me in time or been inclined to.
I really feel like I personally hired the right attorney here. So talk to me about his artwork. Like, that was a weird part of his whole thing. Was, I mean, it was freaky, this kind of stuff that he had. I think he actually gave you some pieces, as he did some other inmates, to keep some peace, right?
Yeah, he was a terrible, he should have stuck to house painting,
yeah.
Put it that way. It was horrible. I mean, he would paint these freaky clowns or a skull with a clown hat on it. He painted one specifically for me, which was like a seascape, but it was just terrible, Dave. I mean, the kind of stuff that I don't even think Goodwill would have taken.
Was this ever a wake up in the middle of the night and just kind of be freaked out by even digging deeper into his case?
You know, I never had a nightmare about Gacy. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Of all the years, I never dreamed of him, or I never.
Do you have a nightmare about me by any chance?
Well, we can talk about that off off mic.
Not a dream, a nightmare is what I was saying. Yeah, exactly.
It's Gacy just appeared to be normal, and you could not look at him and think about the things he did and just kind of balance those two things. You can't picture him doing those things.
How many years before the death penalty case for him was he arrested?
So he was arrested in 1978, convicted in 1979, spent 14 years on death row, and was executed. And this coming May will be the 30th anniversary of his execution.
So even before that, you weren't even an attorney, I don't believe, at the time.
It was a high school.
So you were following this case, obviously, like everybody was in Chicago. Because you grew up in Berwyn.
Yes.
And I was in the western suburbs as well. But, I mean, we were very close to that area in, what is it, Norwood Park or Norwich or whatever it might be. But you were following it along the way. And so when it finally came to that time for you to represent him, you pretty much had a very clear idea of who this individual was.
Absolutely. And I have always been a serial killer student. Okay. I was a kid. I read all about Jack the Ripper and the Black Dahlia and, you know, of course, you know, Dahmer and all these people. I mean, I would read all these books. Ted Bundy, A Stranger Beside Me by Ann Rule, is one of the best true crime books I've ever read. So I was really up to speed on him. And I even knew what his psychological reports said when he was arrested. So, I mean, when I met him, I felt like, in some ways, I did know him.
Mighty sit there for 14 years. Was that typical? Is that typical?
Very typical. Okay. And it's just, you are entitled to a lot of appeals when you have a death penalty case. Very typical. And it's even longer in some states.
Because there's a lot of people that may not have issue with the death penalty itself, and they rather have them sit in jail and suffer and be there for the rest of their life rather than get the chair, because I think that's the easy way out.
A lot of people think that. Yeah. And interestingly, even though I don't want to advocate, you know, in favor of the death penalty, I think prisoners adapt to prison. I think some of them live a pretty solid life there. They get their meals, they like their you know, their camaraderie, and you know, you can really adapt to a smaller life, even though you're living in what I say is a half a parking space, really.
And you're, as I said, you're getting to know him, but your relationship with him was different from that of the other lawyers involved. Describe that a little bit.
Well, Gacy, in fact, really liked women. He loved his mother. He loved his two sisters. He actually had good relationships with his two wives. So he liked to talk to me about cooking, and he liked to talk to me about gardening. And he was very gentle with me. With the men, he was more oppositional. He was more aggressive. And he was a little more disagreeable. So I was sort of tasked with getting him to do things that we needed him to do, because I could kind of do the end run around his aggressiveness.
What was specifically your role? Because it was a group of people. It was a team. There was three other lawyers.
Right.
What was specifically?
I handled one case before an international commission. We kind of did an academic appeal. So I handled that part. I helped out on all the appeals. But really, one of the things that I was tasked to do was to answer the media calls, because part of the death penalty advocacy is to make statements in the public, to change the public opinion about the death penalty. I don't think I did much to do that, because Gacy was not the person to do that with. But I would go on, and I would sometimes spend all day giving interviews to national and international media about why I think the death penalty is wrong.
Gotcha. Well, we are talking to Karen Conti, author of Killing Time, with John Wayne Gacy, founder of Conti Dolan Law, host of the Karen Conti Show on WGN Radio, contributor on the Bob Surratt Morning Show. Her website is KarenConti.com, and there's more with her next on 720 WGN. All right, day player Karen Conti, WGN Radio. Karen's new book is Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy. So you have expressed a really interesting concern that Gacy was not apprehended sooner than he was. And what do you attribute that to? The time, was there a more nefarious reason for why he wasn't caught sooner? Just, you know, seemed like it went on forever, right?
A lot of this is speculation, but it was a different era. I mean, we didn't have the databases that connected the crimes. So Gacy had been arrested and convicted and spent time in prison in Iowa prior to this killing spree. And it didn't seem that the police knew about that, because there was no, like I said, integrated database. I mean, he would have had to, you know, probably, register as a sex offender today, right?
So, yeah, that's true.
And people in the neighborhood would have known that he was convicted and what he was convicted of. I also think that he was so upstanding in the community that people just, you know, these boys would show up at his door to apply for a job, last seen, They would disappear. The police would ask Gacy, where are these kids? And he would say, I have no idea. They're probably a runaway. There were actually victims who escaped from Gacy, who went and the police charged Gacy. They would drop the charges. It over and over again, they had so many opportunities to arrest him, and they just didn't. And I don't know, you know, you can make a conspiracy theory and say that Gacy was politically connected. Someone was actually protecting him. But that doesn't really make much sense if you really, really think about it.
Well, we were talking about earlier that he was obviously disturbed, but of sound mind, which don't, you know, to most people, that does not go together. Sound mind and disturbed. But even before the execution, it had to be confirmed that he was of sound mind before they put him in the, you know, in the chair, right?
Yes, I actually thought he was going to fake insanity so he could buy some extra time.
You know, we were talking a little bit about the death penalty in general. There's 27 states, and I had to do my research on this because I didn't know this. 27 states that still allow the death penalty as of this year. Still, Idaho, Mississippi, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Utah still use the firing squad.
Yes, they haven't done it in a while, but I think they're gearing up.
There's one coming up, right?
Yeah, they're gearing up in Idaho. They're actually spending $750,000 to build a firing squad chamber.
You can do that anywhere in Chicago for the most part of these days, right?
I hate to say that, but it's true.
In the last 30 years, exoneration cases have exposed the very real shortcomings of you know, arrests and the legal system, and since 73... 190 people have been exonerated from death row, but how many do we know, and you don't, more than 1,500 people executed in the United States in the last 50 years that were innocent because we didn't have DNA?
Right.
You know,
we get it wrong all the time, and I will tell you that in cases that are death penalty qualified, which means there's aggravating factors like multiple victims, children, older people, you know, sadistic crimes, the worst crimes are really subject to a bad verdict. Why? If 12 jurors are exposed to all these horrible things, they're going to look at that person in the defendant chair and they're going to say, I just can't take the chance that guy did it and I'm going to let him walk. So you have a lot of bad verdicts when it comes to these kind of crimes.
All right. Karen Conti, author of Killing Time with John Wayne Gacy. You can pick it up at Amazon.com. Karen, again, is the founder of Conti Dolan Law, host of the Karen Conti Show on WGN and contributor to the Bob Surratt Morning Show. And her website is KarenConti.com. We talk a lot, but it's nice to talk on air because we don't do it that often.
It's great. It's really wonderful. I should do it more often.
We should do that more often. Great book, and thank you again.
Thank you, David.
All right, much more ahead on 720 WGN.